Looking forward.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Looking Forward with me, Svetlana Yakimenko.
And with me, Victor Arfeev. Hello, everybody.
Victor, have you noticed that the moment you switch on the television or, you know, you browse the internet, there's so much coverage of incidences of violence, of shooting. It's just everywhere. It's happening everywhere.
Yeah, it's terrible now. You know, it's all about violence and the death of famous people. You know,
it's true.
It's terrible because every day...
It's always making the headlines, yes.
It's just news about people who are important in your life. They die. Then there are schools who had been attacked in the United States.
A lot of mass, yes.
A lot of about that.
Mass shootings,
and
yes.
Violence everywhere. I don't know how to rule with this. You know, I think that how to live, if you stop thinking about that, that you're a little bit out of the world. But if you continue going this stream, or unfortunately even mainstream of information, you could say that everything is terrible in this world.
Yes, it's true. I'm also wondering, I mean, look at the coverage, the media coverage of all the mass shootings. Is there too much of it?
Yeah, of course. I think that they decided to cover it just to say, be aware. But at the same time, when you watch them, all these terrible pictures, photo pictures and videos, you understand that violence is just inside you. And they start, well...
It becomes a part of your life.
Yes, it starts...
Instead of being shocked,
yes,
in a way, you are dulled into a sense where...
You start to be interested in
Or you're not really that shocked because, well, you know, it's a common day occurrence. It becomes a common day occurrence.
And but, it's also very important, and it's very sad, but when you see it every day, you start to be familiar to it.
That's true, yeah. Mm. But of course, I tend to think of people who are very impressionable, who may react, well, who knows how they may react to so much media coverage of violence. And I was just recently looking at a study that's been carried out by researchers from Arizona State University, and they called the study Contagion in Mass Killings and School Shootings. And they looked into databases related to mass killings and school shootings between 1998 and 2013 in the United States. And they applied, this was unusual, a mathematical contagion model to the data. And these scientists discovered that mass killings and shootings, school shootings, create a period of contagion, which lasts an average of 13 days. So what they're saying is when a mass shooting or a school shooting takes place and it's all over the media and people are watching this, for the next, say, 2 weeks, you can see a wave of violence following in its wake, perhaps again.
In different
yes,
ways.
Perhaps right? Because it was inspired by watching this violence in other people who, well, maybe are, I don't know, mentally unstable, or they have this inclination to propensity
to
towards violence, but
yes,
they just need something to trigger it. So
yes,
one wonders
it's
whether...
It's got to be an example for
yes,
them, right?
Exactly.
Of behavior.
Or maybe they want to be in the limelight. They want to be famous, and that's their way of reaching fame.
Yes, it's a big, unfortunately, tradition how to be famous if you do something terrible.
Looking forward.
We have a guest joining us on the show, Jonathan Metzl, Professor of Sociology and Psychiatry and Director of the Center for Medicine, Health and Society at Vanderbilt University in the United States. And in fact, one of his current projects is guns and mental illness. Whenever the subject of gun violence or mass shootings emerges, people tend to associate it with mental illness. In fact, the layman tends to think there's typically something wrong with those who have violent proclivities. But how true is that?
So there are two categories of violence that we're talking about here. On one hand, there's the question of mass shootings. And I think that there have been some rather convincing studies that have shown that persons who commit mass shootings do have often a tendency towards some sort of mental illness symptom. And so people who commit these large, horrific crimes, at many points in their past, have had symptoms such as substance abuse, psychosis, depression. And I do think that we see that that's prevalent. But I think that it's important to note that when you look at gun violence more broadly, in other words, everyday gun violence, everyday shooting, there is no association between mental illness and violence. And so I think that, you know, people like me who study this say it's much more important that we don't stigmatize persons with mental illness, because in terms of everyday shooting, people with mental illness are much more likely to be victims of violence, not perpetrators of violence.
Is there any way to predict who will become violent? Can we actually look at a child at school displaying perhaps a certain erratic pattern of behavior and predict a future violent criminal?
Well, it's hard because, again, we're talking about two categories of violence here. And so on one hand, mass shootings are incredibly, incredibly hard to predict because they, even though they're horrific and terrible, they occur with not enough regularity to predict who's going to commit a shooting. And so I think that particularly diagnosing mental illness and assuming that that's going to predict who's going to commit a mass shooting is incredibly difficult, if not impossible. And studies have shown that psychiatrists are very poor predictors about which of their patients are going to commit violence. And so I think that people who study this very often argue that it's almost impossible to predict who's going to commit a shooting. What you can do is limit their access to guns. So what you want to do is make it harder for people to get guns or have them have background checks or some kind of screening so that you can, even if you can't predict who's going to shoot somebody, you can make it harder for people to get guns in the first place.
Now, going back to the gun rights issue, I recently came across articles that a number of U.S. states have significantly loosened laws that regulate where people can carry guns. What are the implications, and what is your personal take on this?
Oh, yeah. Well, I think that what we're seeing in a number of states, I mean, as you know, the United States is a country with a long tradition of self-defense, and guns are a very meaningful object in our culture. But I do think that more and more states should pass laws that should make it harder for people to get guns, at least force them to undergo some kind of background check or screening. I think that we've shown those kind of laws are very effective in preventing violence.
And another question, does the influence of toy guns and computer games factor in heavily these days, in the case of the younger generation?
Well, again, it's very hard to predict because there are millions and millions and millions of people who are playing video games, millions of kids. And so it's hard to predict which person who's going to watch video games is going to go on to commit violent acts. And so, again, I think that if there's a larger issue of a violent society, that might be something to pay attention to. But there's no statistical correlation between people who play video games and people who go on to shoot other people.
Looking forward.
Well, yes, I have to agree that definitely you have to differentiate between gun violence as in, I don't know, gangs, you know, fighting for control of some area, or when we're looking at just one person who suddenly wakes up in the morning and decides to go and start a shooting spree, and we don't know what triggered that. And apparently even psychiatrists are very, well, they're not very adept at predicting who's going to be violent among their patients.
Yeah, it's a very difficult question because, you know, some people say that violence in the films on TV is very bad for just the future behavior of people because they believe that if here in the film they can shoot, I also could shoot. But on the other side, there are a lot of people who are saying it's very good you survive the shooting with them in the films, and that's why in reality you will never shoot. And I think that both positions are really true because it depends on people. You know, some people would say we'll be satisfied with shooting with computer games, right? But some people say if they shoot, I also would shoot, and it is my pleasure.
So you think that someone perhaps who has this violence sort of pent up inside will release it by just playing a computer game?
Right. But
and then going on and living their life.
You never know, and it depends in which condition you are. Because if you drink let's say, some beer, and then you understand that you're Superman and you want to shoot. It's one thing. But the other side, if you drink some beer, say, I go and play a computer game, so I win. It's also,
yes.
I think that we're so complex, we're so mixed, people, that it's really difficult to predict what will happen. But at the same time, I think that its gun regulation should be tough.
Right. I agree with you that I was just going to say that, okay, if it's difficult for any psychiatrist, no matter how long they work with a certain patient, to predict what's going to happen and what might trigger them to go on a shooting spree or, something like that, I agree that the laws should be more strict. I mean, there has to be very strict screening as to who is able to buy a gun, who is able to buy weapons.
Because it could be also violence against yourself. You know, if you are in depression, you take your gun and you kill yourself.
Well, yes, the way life is these days. I mean, people lose jobs, they go through career highs and lows, family problems. You don't know what's going to lead you into this dreadful depression. And yes,
and
if there's a gun
knows.
There...
Are these people who lost their career or they are in a terrible family situation, are they going to kill someone or to kill themselves or what will happen with them, you know?
And there's, of course, the case of this transmission of violence. I agree. I think it's probably, in a way, contagious because if you see so much violence around you, I mean, look at youngsters who grow up in neighborhoods where there's a lot of violence. They tend to embrace violence as part of their everyday life. Instead of rejecting it. Okay, someone might reject it outright and work really hard to get out of that environment. But a lot of the people just go with the flow because violence is a part of their lives.
Yeah. And then it starts to be a tradition, right? In the family tradition. So if my father is really violent, so I'll be violent and so on and so on. I think, you know, Sveta, my question is, don't you think that people still think more about things around us than about themselves? That means the analyze of our human nature is not still deep enough. And that's why there are no answers to these terrible questions.
It's true, but people have lost this ability to self-analyze. It's such a material world. There's so much flashing around and happening around you. It's entertaining. It's contagious. And you find it hard to just take time out, stop, and look deep inside yourself. Maybe you won't like what you'll see.
Yes, exactly so. Because people believe that if they look deeply inside themselves, they start to be weaker.
Mm. Yes.
Not stronger than weaker.
And it's a Pandora's box that sometimes you don't want to open, you know, once you start looking deep into yourself.
Yeah, it's true. And sometimes it's a really Pandora's box. Yeah.
But going back to what we started about the media coverage, I do think it could be toned down a little bit.
But here also it's an interesting question. How can you do to that censorship, you know?
Right.
Self-censorship,
yes.
It's also, you
yes.
don't know. Sometimes it's good to show that there are a lot of examples of violence in the world. From the other side, it's not good. And where will be this balance? You know, personally, I wouldn't say it. I don't know.
I wouldn't be able to either.
Yeah. Look, if, for instance, I'm an editor of big newspaper, I don't know. You remember in the Soviet times, they never wrote about violence.
Nothing happened.
Nothing happened, you know, on the bad side. And still, well, we were probably more moral, but we were at the same time more weak. Something was...
Because we lacked the knowledge.
We lacked the knowledge, and we lacked the knowledge of the real life.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of fantastic world.
Well, I have to agree that, yes, there's no way you can really stop this media coverage without censorship. I suppose it will always be there on such a broad scale. But what worries me is how people react to it. I don't know. I think that perhaps we're going back to more education again. We're going back to education, upbringing, in the home, in the family. That's where you have to cultivate a different approach to what you see on the screen, what you see happening in the real world and how you react to it.
I agree. You know, as far as I understand, we do not know exactly how to talk to our children because sometimes they believe we are too smart for them or too moral or something lacking in us, you know. Because now these days, these contemporary children, they're really very, very interesting and they know a lot of things about life. So we have to be really more, not even smarter. We have to play better with their...
We have to try harder.
Yes,
to
try harder and to play better this ping pong with them.
Yeah. Well, on that note, we're going to wrap up this edition of Looking Forward with me, Svetlana Yakimenko.
And with me, Viktor Arafeev. Goodbye, everybody.